producing.
From listening to records, I just knew what to do. I mainly taught myself. And, you know, I did pretty well, except there were a few mistakes that I have just recently cleared up.
KLN listeners, it is the third day of January, the year 2011. Happy New Year, everybody. You are listening to CKLN's Rude Awakening here on Mondays and Thursdays with your host, BK, a.k.a. VJ. And from here from 6 a.m. to 7 a.m., I'd love to break down the issues with respect to the New World Order. We're all very optimistic this year, and I do hope everyone out there has a great year. But we still have a world to live in that is run by large multinational corporations and international banks that basically print fiat money from nothing, loan it to the world to put the world in their debt, buy control of the world, and control most of the major institutions that control our cultures. Hey, it happens, folks. We've seen empires before. We saw the Egyptian empires, the Pharaoh, and the Roman Empire, the British Empire, and of course our modern day extension of that. So here on the 3rd of January to start off 2011, I do want to wish everyone a happy new year. I do want to encourage everyone to keep it positive and to remain optimistic, but to also recognize that our optimism must be tempered with some reality, because otherwise it's blind optimism and then reality shatters it easy. Our optimism can be exceptionally fragile if we're not careful in maintaining a strong tether to reality. Our optimism in the face of reality is what defines the dreams we have and efforts to achieve those dreams. So I'll give you an example. Former New York Times war correspondent Chris Hedges was talking about the difference between a dream and an illusion. And he said a dream is what you work for. It's what you aim for. A dream is something that you plan to achieve. An illusion is something that you live in. So a dream is a very active process. An illusion is a very passive process. And I know here in Canada and around the world, as part of this system of globalization run by primarily the Anglo-American establishment, old moneyed families in Europe, the old world order 100, 200, 300 years ago, they just made sure their kids ran things after they left with the same schools and the same clubs and so on. And so where we are today in this system is we are at a point where we have to sort of recognize that and figure out what steps we can take to mitigate that. Music to my ears here on the 3rd of January 2011. Well, it's an understanding that we have all the sort of components that we need to take action against the New World Order. We have the information, we have the goods on them, we have many of their plans, we have an expectation of what 2011 will bring and 2012 will bring, and yet that is often at odds with what we're supposed to say about it. For example, we will get credit for cheering each other up, and rightly so, because nobody wants to be depressed. But as part of that credit for cheering each other up, we will get an exceptional amount of credit for having a positive outlook while denying the facts. And this is really, really tricky here. This is something that I'll break down for you, as best I can, but if you have a positive outlook, then you say nothing but positive things in this new social communication paradigm that we live in. But if you say anything negative, then you may not even be negative. You may just be stating some facts that happen to be, disturbing, and yet, something that we can deal with. And yet, that if you say those things, it'll take away from the overall positive vibe you're selling, then you choose to ignore those facts in what you're saying when it comes to saying something positive. And so this positivity in the absence of an ability to deal with facts that aren't negative per se, they're just reality, is something that we do have to get past here in 2011, because the components are there. We've got music, we've got artists, I make my own music, but I'm like, hell, when I really want to get inspired, I play music by people that are better than me. And we got Bob Marley, Bob Dylan, we got Public Enemy, we got Eminem's new album, Recovery. We have just all sorts of music out there and ways to get inspired. Electronic music, jazz, ways to stimulate our brain, ways to give us the energy to handle things that we would normally consider difficult, from working out and jogging at 5 o'clock in the morning, as I often see people doing, to trying to compose our thoughts with respect to the New World Order. Because I got to tell you, there's a bunch of people out there doing a great job. Shout out to some Canadians: Dr. Henry Mako, henrymako.com. Dan Dix, Brian Law, Steve Davies at PressureTruth.ca, Patrick White from Conspiracy Culture, ConspiracyCulture.com, book and DVD store, Victor Fletcher from the Toronto Street News, Ms. Dee Nicholson from Canadians for Health Freedom.org, Ms. Sydney White, teaching class called Studies in Propaganda at University of Toronto, Mark Savory, Freeman, member of Toronto Truth Seekers, Jr., the rest of the crew, and tons of people across country, Sylvain Molyneux from Free Domain Radio, James Corbett from the Corbett Report, locally Richard Spirit from AM 640 on Sunday nights, and soon coming to TV this January, in the next few weeks, Richard Spirit with his own TV show. We've got Art Bell, we've got Spaceman, we've got an amazing wealth of talent. We've got Truth or Girls. Truth or Girls at Truth or Girl at youtube.com/Truth or Girls, truthorgirls.com. And there's tons and tons of people that are articulating well an analysis of what's going on step by step as information just hits us at a ridiculous level. As here in the text and the Twitterverse, the amount of propaganda we consume in tiny digestible chunks is massively increasing all the time as we get addicted to information and updates and a rapid-fire information stream. And so we have to deal with this. We can basically see what's happening here. We have many valiant people out there doing their best to break down what's happening with respect to the forces behind globalization and how they affect everyone in the world, including people here in Toronto and, of course, wherever you live, and how they're affecting you, and the character of the people that are in charge of the world. This is broken down on a regular basis. And these people, and people in the States and throughout the world, have many fans. There's no doubt they have many fans. Millions and millions of people are looking at this information. But keep in mind one thing. The New World Order, that is the forces behind globalization, the central banking, old moneyed families, and their assorted New World Orderlies and think tanks and minions, don't mind so much if we know they exist. Because they've been planning a scientific dictatorship. Part George Orwell's 1984, part Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. And the 1984 part we're seeing more and more without realizing we just, you know, by and large, went through a good chunk of the Brave New World part. Here's a classic distinction between the two of them. Orwell feared the banning of books. And Aldous Huxley, in his science fiction novel, Brave New World, feared that nobody would want to read them. We've got a bit of a pincer action coming from both sides here. And one thing that's going to be really important is making sure people can keep what they like and still take action. Because you can't keep what you like if you can't take action. That doesn't make any sense. Nobody out there who can say with a straight face in a 5-minute conversation that, yes, they would really strongly recommend that we do nothing about anything going wrong in our culture. That we should trust wholeheartedly our media, our politicians, and other groups working on handling our problems. And yet, it's even tougher these days to have that 5-minute conversation or 10-minute conversation. I remember 5 years ago, 5 years ago, if you were at a party, if you were in a given situation, you could talk about an issue like, say, the 9/11 attacks in September 2001 for 5-10 minutes, have an interesting conversation, go through some details, you know, have people say, well, maybe I'll check it out, maybe I won't, this and that, but you could actually talk about these things for longer periods of time. Through the scientific indoctrination process, courtesy of our mass media, we see today that it is much, much more difficult to talk about serious issues. And that's something that we have to be concerned about. And yet, if we don't want to talk about them, then we don't have to. We just have to get into the practice of passing on information so that other people can digest it at their own pace and not be startled by revelations they aren't prepared for. That includes buying a DVD burner for $20, $50 or whatever, buying a bunch of blank DVDs and sharing copies of, say, United We Fall, which features interviews with Canadians, other activists, and intellectuals and professors, and Canadian globalists, and Americans as well, courtesy of PressForTruth.ca. So you can basically see a debate about the idea of a North American Union, the centralization and harmonization of power across the borders of Canada, America, and Mexico into the hands of the corporate elite and their trilateral working groups. Is this a good idea? Is this a bad idea? Is this natural? Is this engineered? Is this something we should do something about? And people might think, you know, oh, it's hopeless. Who wants to listen? You know, and so on. I'll give you an example from Chris Hedges again with his article 2011, A Brave New Dystopia. And this is what I'm saying about finding your voice in this system here. Because Chris Hedges from TruthDig.com, courtesy of Infowars.com, writes on January 1st, we have been gradually disempowered by a corporate state that, as Huxley foresaw, seduced and manipulated us through sensual gratification, cheap mass-produced goods, boundless credit, political theater, and amusement. While we were entertained, the regulations that once kept predatory corporate power in check were dismantled, the laws that once protected us were rewritten, and we were impoverished. Now that credit is drying up, good jobs for the working class are gone forever, and mass-produced goods are unaffordable, we find ourselves transported from Brave New World to 1984. The state, crippled by massive deficits, endless war, and corporate malfeasance, is sliding towards bankruptcy. It's time for Big Brother to take over from Huxley's Feelies, the Orgy Porgy, and the Centrifugal Bumble Puppy. We are moving from a society where we are skillfully manipulated by lies and illusions to one where we are overtly controlled. And folks here in Toronto saw at the G20 summit that happened just this past June where this is going with respect to the state deciding to flex its muscles. And we also saw the futility of protesting and or rioting when in fact we are engaged in an info war. And if you're yelling in a culture that generally doesn't like yelling except maybe at rock concerts or sporting events and the occasional party, but if you're A, getting political, and B, yelling about it, which means you're getting people out of their comfort zones just by the very nature of what you're doing, then you'd better make sure they know what you're talking about. That means not going to protests where half the people can say, we're really mad, and listen to the other half say, we already know. But actually taking your message to the people that are an audience for protests, demonstrations, rallies, and what have you. And by letting them know, look, no matter what the media says about what we're doing, and you know, everybody complains about the corporate media and characterizations of various groups. So to save us the trouble of complaining later, we're telling you why we're getting together. Although when you see what's happening in Europe, in Greece, in Ireland, in France, and the demonstrations and taking to the streets, in Greece the government still passed crippling austerity measures, slashing the salaries of civil servants inside government, so a government job is no longer safe, and cutting the services to people in the private sector and average everyday Greeks. And they did this after extended rioting. So we can see that rioting doesn't work, that protests don't work, that having your voice subsumed and controlled at the behest of the leaders of organizations, who by and large have to be political to be successful, and thus in some ways have to be less honest. That's the problem. Now, if more individuals can find their own voice in different communities and put out messages of a greater variety, that can appeal to more people where they live, then instead of just getting mad at policies once in a while, every few months, and blowing off steam, often at the invitation of the government, who are using you to train the cops to run population control exercises to beat down the public just in case they want to riot or protest. Instead of doing that, maybe we can reject some of these policies. Or maybe we can demand more from our elected officials and give them the political cover fire that allows them to push for more within the system. You know, and I, it is 6:35 this morning here on the 3rd of January, 2011. I apologize. I'm trying to. I tried to work the old MP3 plug in play thing. I had some clips I wanted to play and some funky music. I was gonna run for today's show, but I can't get the MP3 USB connection going to pull out these files. So my apologies for that. We are listening to DJ Shadow's introducing album, a hip hop and breaks classic from back in the day. So hopefully you folks are enjoying that out there. But back to the idea of understanding the system. John Young from Cryptome.org. John Young from Cryptome, CryptoMe.org. Recently interviewed on the Alex Jones radio show at Infowars.com and Russia Today, RT America on YouTube. And he's one of the original founders of WikiLeaks. He's part of a group called Cypherpunks, CYPHERPUNKS. And you can go to Wikipedia and look for Cypherpunks. And you can see an original group of hackers and software engineers and some really accomplished people in the fields of cyber warfare, hacking, and cybersecurity. We got together a few years ago to create WikiLeaks. And he also runs Cryptome.org, and he's critical of WikiLeaks for taking money, for agreeing to redact a lot of the leaks they put out, for working with only the big corporate media like the New York Times and other select papers to release these leaks at once. Julian Assange for being sort of possibly a fall guy, patsy, in a larger plan for the government to use the WikiLeaks controversy to crack down on the internet and institute more cybersecurity measures, and basically get more money for cybersecurity, which is what a lot of these threats are meant to do, and why a lot of these threats are in fact engineered by governments and or intelligence agencies and military agencies and so on. And so that's John Young, and that's Cryptome.org, and that's a bit of a critique of WikiLeaks and something that I've long suspected here on Rude Awakening about the whole WikiLeaks phenomena. And again, as long as we're just fans, then we'll cheer for that. Like, it is a win in the abstract sense against the corporate powers of evil.
One of them has eyes as big as Jolly Ranchers. Beautiful girl. Beautiful girl.
And that is a concern. And a beautiful girl named Maya, the artist, M-I-A, Sri Lankan rapper, singer, came out with a mixtape called WikiLeaks recently, reflecting her support for this. And there is a temptation to support this because so many people do. So when you get people out there that are losing hope and that are clearly feeling disempowered and threatened by the system, and then they have something to cheer for, do you take that away? Do you point out that maybe one of the points of this scandal is to give you something to cheer for? Is to make us think, by and large, as the general public, that we are getting the real dirt on these people? Finally, there's a group dedicated to doing that, and the mass media is covering them, and they're revealing the really juicy stuff, and this is somehow going to keep everything in check? Was that a political calculation of the shadow government cross-promotion of the efforts of WikiLeaks? So back to John Young from Krypton for a sec. He said that one of the reasons you see so many politicians talking such a good game when they're outside of office and then going inside into the system and then not coming through is once they're brought into Congress or the Senate in the United States, or possibly the federal, provincial, or city governments here in Canada, they're often given access to classified information and then sworn to secrecy, lifetime secrecy, just to shut them up. Again, more info just for info's sake. So, for example, these politicians aren't necessarily shown information that can help them help their constituents. But they're shown information for information's sake to guarantee their future silence, because they have to be sworn to secrecy so they don't speak about that information and related issues. And so the concept of WikiLeaks and the concept of battling secrecy is a noble one. But ultimately, the only way to beat the New World Order is to get more people locally active where they live in sharing ideas on how to push for better policy. Otherwise, we're going to be saddled with the ones we get. I'll give you an example from thestar.com, the Toronto Star, from today. Academics critical of skyrocketing pay for CEOs. Critical. This is from Madhavi Acharya and Tom Yu from the Toronto Star. If you forgot to wish the boss a happy new year, don't worry. He's already had one. By about mid-afternoon Monday, the 100 best-paid chief executive officers in Canada will have already earned the equivalent of an average full-time salary in this country. So, by around 2 o'clock this afternoon, after starting work at 7, 8, 9 o'clock this morning, the 100 best-paid CEOs in Canada will have earned the equivalent of an average full-time salary in Canada. That's for half a day's work. The gap between the executive suite and minimum wage worker is even larger. The average CEO had earned a full year's worth of minimum wage work by about 3:15 p.m. on New Year's Day.
Finally, they called.
And this is according to an annual study on executive pay from the Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives. The total average compensation for Canada's 100 best-paid CEOs was $6.64 million in 2009, compared to the average Canadian income of $42,988 and the average minimum wage workers' income of $19,877. The biggest pay package went to Aaron Regent at Barrick Gold Corp., who made $24 million in 2009, according to McKenzie's calculations. In second place was Hunter Harrison at Canadian National Railway Company at $17.3 million, followed by Gerald Schwartz at Onyx Corp. at $16.7 million. Quote, "It's just breathtaking," Hugh McKenzie, economist for the Ottawa-based nonprofit research group, said in an interview. "The skyrocketing level of executive pay in Canada and the U.S. is the primary factor that lies behind growing income equality." And there you get a whitewashed look at this. This isn't seen as corrupt in an era of giant corporate tax breaks, billion and even trillion dollar bank bailouts, huge derivative Ponzi schemes, a stock market that's manipulated and based purely on propaganda to inflate prices, as opposed to earnings and actual production. And a system that clearly doesn't benefit most people. We're learning about this now. Everybody is going to learn about this. The question is whether or not we can find our voices to express how we feel about this and to push for better policies to mitigate some of these effects. The typical explanation, the article continues, that companies need to offer their chief executive millions in order to attract, keep, and motivate a suitable leader doesn't hold water, McKenzie said. Quote, "You can ask how motivating is it for the average employee, who is actually the person who generates the income for the corporation, to see their CEO is making 300 times what they are. I would think that would be kind of demotivating." And it's true, and these figures have been skyrocketing since the 1970s. You know, where back in the 70s, the average CEO made 15 times what the frontline assembly worker made. And now it's up to 300 times. The CEO pay figures may even be underestimated owing to a change in the way stock option compensation is reported, according to the report. Corporations used to report the amount of income that executives actually realized when they cashed in their options. Beginning in 2008, rather than reporting the amount their executives realized during the year by cashing in options, they reported a statistical estimate of what the options might have been worth in the market when they were granted. So, they're now even fudging the numbers for their pay. And this is a fraction of it. I don't even visit. This includes their investments and the insider trading they do to boost their net worth into the billions. Now, what could a city like Toronto do about this? What could cities anywhere do? Well, I got to tell you, I've been trying to study the propaganda and trying to figure out the best ways to say this and the best ways to ask for this, because we are sort of coming down to crunch time here in 2011, heading into 2012. And could we raise $1 million in this city to put out enough information to wake everybody up to cut crime in half, cut divorce rates in half, cut cancer and other illness rates in half, to cut costs and our city's debt by pushing for things like fluoride in the water supply to be eliminated? Because most of Europe, Vancouver, and Montreal don't use it. It's bad for our health. A whole bunch of us know it because we're buying fluoride water filters and fluoride-free water. And so is it possible to just push to get it out? I saw an article by Joe Warmington in the Toronto Sun a few days ago, talking about how the 5 cents a bag charge will probably be nixed by Mayor Rob Ford of Toronto soon. And Ford said if 90% of people want it, we'll keep it. If people don't want it, we'll take it out. And so when we have all this lip service to democracy that it's necessary for us to have faith in the system, so much faith, in fact, that we don't actually try and appeal to it very often. What if we did? What if we asked our democracies to act like democracies and listen to us? Is it possible for the wealthier people in a city, and by wealthier I mean anybody making over $75,000 a year? Is it possible for people who make over $75,000, $100,000, $150,000 a year to fund efforts and pay people $10 an hour to get the word out about fluoride, vaccine, genetically modified food, aspartame, to help people make smarter choices so we have smarter, calmer, more rational people and a culture that doesn't devolve into animal madness? Because I got to tell you, our egosyncratic culture has been, you know, told just think of yourselves, just think of ourselves, you know. I shouldn't be here on the radio talking this mess. I should be trying to get paid and trying to get laid. And that's it. And in our world of sexual predators and socialist editors here in Communist Canada, in training, we're not there yet, but we're heading there. We need to find more practical ways to look at these problems and look at the idea of policy and not normalizing the actions of these parties and the actions of our politicians and systems and corporations, but pointing them out is insane. Because I got to tell you, no matter what you do, even if you get your own good water, if you pay twice as much for organic food instead of poison food at the grocery store, if you live in a gated community, at some point you will run into one of the products of the state that threatens you, implicitly or explicitly. You'll need to be aware of a growing amount of crime and feel paranoid about it and paranoid to go out and so on. Or you will actually be confronted by a criminal or molested at the airport by a low-level employee. All because they didn't realize how to help protect themselves from being scientifically indoctrinated and psychologically and psychosexually neutered. And there's an article at henrymacow.com the other day, which I saw, courtesy of McLean's, where a whole bunch of career women are wondering why their daughters are turning out to be sluts. And these are career feminists, and they've been, you know, doing it for a minute now, and they can't figure out why. And that's because they don't realize the program to create this. It says here from December 27, 2010, feminists surprise their daughters are sluts. And nothing against anybody doing whatever they want to do. We could even have a promiscuous society that's healthy if it wasn't being manipulated by evil, destructive forces, by the New World Order, by social engineers, by psychologists, psychiatrists, by think tanks, who are trying to create a promiscuous culture just to keep us from bonding, to keep us from feeling any sort of, from building any connections with each other, to turn us into people who use each other for that. Civilized sexual behavior, and this is a Henry Mackow quote, civilized sexual behavior is based on upholding marriage and motherhood. Only then are promiscuity prevented and females valued for their character and ability. Now they're like cheap whores holding numbers in a Bangkok brothel. This is again from Henry Mackow at henrymakow.com. In a recent article, quote, outraged moms, trashy daughters by Ann Kingston from McLean's August 16, 2010, mothers lament that their daughters now see, quote, empowerment in terms of pleasuring males. While the feminist mothers saw power as financial independence and rejected female, quote, objectification, their daughters accept the pornographic message of pop music and advertising. In the words of one mom, they believe, quote, their purpose in life is to be sexual beings who please men, unquote. Quote, a blowjob is like shaking hands, said another mom. Their attitude was, quote, we're emancipated, we're liberated, we're in control, they see it as power, I see it as giving their power away, says another mom. Is it possible for people in this city, or people anywhere for that matter, because it is a system of globalization, they are standardizing thought and culture, they are using forms like text and Twitter to reduce our language, to turn us into robots, into ciphers who will basically answer commands. You know, it'll be yes, no, hey, how you doing, and then go there, okay. You know, the nuances and complexity of language are being reduced, and I find myself as someone who often has a second sentence or two I like to throw in for my own amusement and the amusement of someone I'm interacting with, that you have less latitude to do that these days. You have less latitude to break outside of the norm. And so politely, we will all continue to shrink our vocabulary and our communications until back to the article here. So is it possible? Would it be possible for us to interview, you know, adults? And say, look, instead of letting the retro culture and the Transformers and the video games and all that sort of thing, instead of letting that turn us into children, and instead of the youth culture dominating, and then us trying to act as young as possible, would it be possible for adults locally to explain some of the mistakes and some of the pitfalls that are out there and some of the lessons they've learned to the younger generation in formal ways? Even while wringing their hands, it says here, feminists are blinded by their ideology. The words love, marriage, husband, and family do not appear in the article. No wonder they can't understand the problem and what to do about it. And in the past, men had to commit before they could have sex. As a result, women were cherished for themselves and given lifelong roles that satisfied their deepest emotional needs. Both mothers and daughters are victims of deliberate social subversion. A woman's career used to be a wife and a mother. She consecrated her sexuality for the man she loved, the father of her children, her protector and provider. Young women today are up a creek. They are going to be left high and dry. Even if they land a man, they've lost the ability to love him. Marriage and motherhood is a woman's biological and social destiny. It ensures she is needed, loved, and secure long after her sex appeal has faded. It's mind-blowing that young women are so heedless of their own self-interest. And again, our culture has to do is figure out ways where we can develop some form of absolution, where we can learn to stop blaming ourselves and start blaming the people who are really responsible for what's happening in our culture. Because this isn't about looking back on what you've done and feeling guilty. This isn't about looking at the choices you've made in a culture that offers a lot of corrupt ones and little guidance in how to deal with them and say they're flawed. It's what can you do despite these? Can you watch sports and still man up and deal with the New World Order? Can you play video games and not get brainwashed into becoming a soldier? You know, back in 2007, I wrote a song called If We Can't Do It, It Can't Be Done. If We Can't Make It Fun, It Can't Be Won, is the hook. And one of the lyrics was, every itch a model, every ego a soldier, see it written down in a Pentagon folder. Because that's what I saw happening at the time in 2007. Every chick a model, every dude a soldier, see it written down in a Pentagon folder. And then more recently, what's your Call of Duty? Black Ops. Check the Pentagon trying to be your pops. This is a program. And Mike Adams from Natural News, before I give it over to Mr. David James for your four-hour jazz experience. 2010 in review. Here's what happened in the world of natural health and health freedom. A lot of good news. A lot of awareness of bisphenol A was increased. A lot of awareness of the dangers of fluoride, the dangers of MSG, AIDS is being exposed as vitamin D as something good for you is more promoted. And yet at the same time, Bill C-36 was passed here in Canada, which is basically a reincarnation of Bill C-6 and C-51 and C-52, restricting our access to natural health supplements, allowing crack house style regulation to be used where SWAT teams can kick down the doors of people selling natural health supplements. And a similar bill in the U.S., Bill S-510, was passed to bring the U.S. in line with Codex Alimentarius regulations. And there is a connection between all these global issues and all the specific ones. So what will 2011 bring? Well, 2009, in the summer, we had the swine flu pandemic. That was big, huge news, and they were encouraging everyone to get vaccinated. And the pandemic was proven to be fraudulent, and many of the people who took the vaccine suffered adverse ill effects, including Guillain-Barré syndrome and other neurological damage, and worldwide. And yet, only about half of Canadians took it, about a third of the Americans took it, about 75% of the Brits took it, about 6% of the French took it, the French being some of the most active people in the world at talking about how corrupt their aristocracy is and how they need to be kept in line lest they be fed to the guillotine, according to Max Kaiser, financial analyst. So the bottom line is, the more we talk about these things, the more information we put out there, the more we can protect ourselves from being taken in by these frauds. The 2009 saw the swine flu. 2010 saw G20 martial law. 2011, I expect recession riots and riots against austerity, similar to the ones that have been happening in Europe for the last couple of years, to certainly launch in the U.S. and most likely in Canada as a prelude to for the state to crack down on us and to keep half of us safe from the other half, allegedly, to stick the poor on the middle class and the rich, as opposed to the super rich, really controlling this whole equation, and to ignore the fact that there were people that knew they were costing us sovereignty by signing such international agreements, that knew they were shipping our jobs overseas to China and the Far East and destroying our manufacturing base so our kids won't have jobs, that knew they were raising the debt levels, that knew they were brainwashing and distracting us, and that knew that some of this would come out and that it would be difficult for us to fight back. And so that is the key. How active are we going to get in the info war this year, folks? It doesn't matter what we find out that someone else is doing. It doesn't matter who we're fans of. There are people around us that we can appeal to right now to help them handle an increasingly unstable and threatening world and threatening set of circumstances with respect to toxins in their environment and other influences on their health, wealth, relationships, and happiness. And so here on the third day of January 2011, just want to remind all of us to think about what we can do. Not think about how cool something is, not think about how cool that movie review was, or that article was, or this random stand-up comedy-like observation about the world. But how can we find our own voices so those voices can find people who can find their own voices? Until we have a loud enough chorus to push for better policies for a better future. 2011 begins the road to 2012, folks. Let's figure out how we're going to travel it. Good places to do that include Infowars.com, NaturalNews.com, KaiserReport.com, VigilantCitizen.com, FluorideAlert.org, VRAN.org for legal vaccine exemption forms. Please do check those out. Bill Gates has promised to be the decade of vaccines, and that is dangerous, dangerous news. Mercola.com for more health information. Locally, Press4Truth.ca, Toronto, TruthSeekers.com, ConspiracyCulture.com, book and DVD store. The Toronto Street News, Victor Fletcher's paper, sold by the homeless out there for a couple of bucks, and a real example for over a dozen years now of taking it to the system on the streets successfully. Let's find ways to reach out to people who don't normally appreciate this sort of information. Yes, it's a challenge, but if you live here, and if you understand this information and the New World Order, then you can feel you're up to it. And once you feel you're up to it, the sky's the limit. Happy New Year, everybody. Have a fantastic 2011. I am out of here. I will see you on Thursday. The People's DJ, David James, is next.